Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN, and happy Thanksgiving. Well, it's not too far off, and Merry Christmas. That's not too far off either, and we want our pets to be safe around these holidays. Dr. Renee Schmid is Director of Veterinary Medicine and a Senior Veterinary Toxicologist for the Pet Poison Helpline, and here's where I want to start right out of the box. In social media, I believe, Dr. Schmid, you don't believe everything. And there are several, even one I saw put up by a veterinarian, so you'll tell me if this is true or not, that yes, raisins are toxic, as are grapes, to dogs. But there's a solution. Go to your medicine chest and take out some Tums. The, you know, Tums you'd get at a pharmacy. My concern, Dr. Schmid, is that is not good advice.
You got it, Steve. I think I agree with you completely. The issue with the advice is that we have no idea if it's true. We don't know if it works. The theory that's there is not comparing it to the environment of the stomach. We don't know if it works in the same way as what potentially is done with kind of using something similar to fermenting wine. And so our big concern, especially as veterinarians and toxicologists, is that people will choose not to pursue what we know to be effective treatment and then potentially have life-ending kidney failure in their pets because of it.
So let's back up a step or two for people who may not know. Grapes, and specifically raisins, are very dangerous to dogs specifically, correct or no? And also, why is that true, if it's true?
Yeah, absolutely. So grapes and raisins can cause kidney failure to occur in dogs. And we're not 100% sure as to what that toxic component or that toxic ingredient is and why it happens. There have been a lot of theories over the years, and I think the one that is probably most likely accurate, but still not proven, is tartaric acid. Grapes and raisins contain tartaric acid, and so that we know is a kidney toxin, and so we can see kidney failure developing in our dogs. We don't know how much. We don't have a specific toxic dose. What is a safe amount? What is a dangerous amount? We just know that we can definitely see kidney failure occur in dogs after they've ingested grapes and raisins without any treatment afterwards.
So one would say that potentially, even one raisin, potentially, can cause a problem in a large dog?
So we feel that based on our, based on the 22 years of calls we've taken, we feel that most animals, unless it's maybe that little 1-pound teacup chihuahua or little Yorkie, most dogs are going to be able to tolerate one grape or raisin. But after that, it's really all bets off. We think there are some animals who are just more sensitive than others. And so if it were my dog who got into more than one grape or raisin, I would do something about it.
I also want to talk about acetaminophen, which has been in the news. That's Tylenol. And the comparison is suggested by the President of the United States. And we don't want to talk about human medicine here, but he warned against women that are pregnant taking Tylenol because it causes autism in potentially or humans being on the spectrum. I don't know about that, but here's what I know about in dogs. That doesn't seem to be an issue because we don't want our dogs to take acetaminophen, period. End of story, right?
Exactly. So typically there are a lot of other more animal-approved or animal-specific medications for pain control. They're more effective. They're generally going to be safer. And that is something that we want our dogs or our cats to take. With large doses of acetaminophen, we can see liver damage, we can see blood changes, and so those can be very dangerous. There are some, very few, but there may be some diseases that a very low dose of acetaminophen might be discussed or considered, but that really is very uncommon nowadays with just the advancement of medicine in the veterinary world.
And for cats, it's even more problematic if they happen to get into or you give a cat acetaminophen or Tylenol?
Absolutely. The cats are extremely sensitive, much more sensitive than dogs are. They're not able to metabolize or break down that acetaminophen in the same way that a dog or a human could. And so any amount of acetaminophen in a cat can definitely be very problematic for them.
All right. So let's happy Thanksgiving, by the way. And let's
happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Let's talk about Thanksgiving. What is the number one concern or complaint that you get around Turkey Day?
Yeah, so I think, think about the kitchen. The kitchen is a dangerous place for our pets around Thanksgiving, and I could probably say it's a dangerous place for me around Thanksgiving because I love Thanksgiving food. But think of anything like rising bread dough. We're making breads and different things with that for Thanksgiving. Rising bread dough can be extremely problematic in our pets. Alcohol poisoning is something we can see. People are celebrating with alcoholic beverages and wine, and having that set around can be something where dogs and cats are very sensitive to alcohol poisoning. We just talked about grapes and raisins, and so we can certainly see that as an issue as well. And then a lot of times our stuffing or our side dishes are made with onions or garlic, and these can be definitely concerns for our pets. And we can't always forget, we can't always focus just on the toxic things, but things like, the fried turkeys and the grease that's there, that might not be a toxic concern, but we can have some pretty horrible GI effects and pancreatitis developing if they were to get any of that as well.
Well, right. So I was just going to bring that up. So you throw what you don't want into the trash, and the dog gets into the trash, and that includes the turkey skin. Pancreatitis can develop from that, and potentially, pancreatitis truly can be life-ending for a dog.
Absolutely, and it's something that I think many pet owners don't think a lot about because they think, my dog can eat anything, I can give him steak, I can give him, he eats anything out of the yard and not have any issues. But you're absolutely right. Pancreatitis is potentially fatal in animals and in humans. And I don't think it gets the amount of concern that it should. And definitely trying to keep your pet away from that. Nobody wants to spend Thanksgiving evening in the emergency room with their pet. And so keeping any animal away from that trash, and if you're at a family event or a Friendsgiving where you've got the trash can sitting out so it's more convenient and that pet gets into that, boy, they can just really regret it in the end from all the things they get into.
Did you say Friendsgiving? I like that. I want to talk about the top poisons of 2024. Also concerns for Christmas, which isn't too far away. When we come back with, Dr. Renee Schmid of the Pet Poison Helpline on WGN. Dr. Renee Schmid is with the Pet Poison Helpline. She is a senior veterinary toxicologist and director of veterinary medicine. We'll tell you how, if something happens or you're concerned, to reach out to the Pet Poison Helpline and call for help in just a couple of minutes. Yeah, Christmas, not too far away, Dr. Schmid. Do we have some toxic concerns that are especially related to Christmas?
You bet. And I think one of the biggest concerns with our pets around Christmas time is the human component. It's where we're busy, where our routines are off, we're not thinking maybe as clearly or as cautiously as we should around our pets. And so we're leaving things out a little bit more frequently. And so we always have to be concerned about foods because they are tasty, they smell good, they taste good, and so our pets can get into them more. Maybe we're baking more for gifts or for parties and events. And so things like chocolates and xylitol and macadamia nuts and grapes and raisins and onions and garlic, all of those things that are concerns all year round but tend to be a little bit more amplified around the holidays. But another thing that a lot of times we don't think about are all the guests that come into our household. And maybe they're staying for the weekend or several days, and they bring their medications with them or their supplements with them. We have to be really careful about where they place those medications. Are they in a baggie that's in their suitcase or their bag on the floor? And the pet goes in and roots around and gets into something that they shouldn't have, and multiple days of medications that can be certainly problematic.
You rattled off some things that I think people might not know about. One is macadamia nuts. Talk about that a bit.
Yeah, macadamia nuts are interesting because we don't really know why this happens. We just know that it does, where we can see some neurologic signs. We can see some difficulty walking. We can see some joint pain developing with macadamia nuts, specifically in dogs. Fortunately, most of the time it resolves or it improves on its own, but it's something that can be quite painful to these guys who get into it. And then there's also the risk of pancreatitis, which we talked about earlier. We can see pancreatitis with that as well because of the high fat content in the macadamia nut.
So I want my room to smell or the house to smell like Christmas. So I plug in one of those potpourri things, and I happen to have a pet bird. Why is that a concern?
Yeah, so birds have an extremely sensitive respiratory tract, and it's something that even the slightest of fragrances can really set them off. And so, unfortunately, in our bird households, I'm a really big advocate of not using any type of fragrances, scents, diffusers, anything like that, because of their sensitive respiratory tract. And even just placing them into a different room often isn't enough because the air is circulating throughout that house. And so it's something that they can still be exposed to. So definitely, again, unfortunately for our birds, our bird households, we want to avoid any type of fragrance that's there.
All right, so let's talk about it. The top 10 pet poisons of 2024. To see them all, you have to go to your website because we won't have time for that. But let's talk about the top three. So we already mentioned chocolate. Great, that's number one. Number one.
Yes.
Grapes and raisins are number two. Bromethalin is number... What the heck is that? That's number three.
You got it. It's bromethalin.
That's what I said.
And that's an active ingredient in rodenticides, so rat mouse bait. And that is something that a lot of times in the past, traditionally, we think of a rat mouse poison. It causes bleeding issues to occur. Vitamin K1 usually is the treatment. But this one's different. It's very different. And it actually causes brain swelling to occur. And we see seizures and body tremors. And these guys can develop a coma from it. So definitely something that can be a big concern. It's in the what we call the residential rat and mouse poison. So you can go to your local grocery store, your local, supply store, and purchase a rat and mouse bait that has bromethalin in it.
All right, for cats, here again, we won't have time for all the top 10, but I'll start at number three and work my way up. Number three, onions, chives, leeks, shallots. Wow, they're all together there. They're that commonly that dangerous for cats.
Yes, and while they're definitely a concern for dogs too, but this is another instance where the cat drew the short straw. And they are much more sensitive than dogs, about 3 to 5 times more sensitive than dogs are to this. And the components in these allium species, kind of plant foods, which includes garlic, we can see blood changes. So they'll have blood cell breakdown. And you can only imagine if our blood cells are breaking down, we become anemic. The body doesn't get the oxygen that it needs the nutrients that it needs in order to survive. And so these guys can be really, unfortunately, fatal if they ingest onions.
Interesting. Number two is chocolate. I know chocolate is dangerous for cats, but a couple things here. Some people don't know that, I think, Dr. Schmidt. They know about dogs and chocolate, not necessarily cats. And the other thing is a misconception that cats will never be interested in chocolate, but they apparently are sometimes.
Yes, for sure. you know, it smells good and it tastes good. Fortunately for cats, they didn't draw the short straw. They're on an equal playing field, so it's just as concerning for dogs as it is for cats. And, you know, the cats can get under that Christmas tree and find chew on that package that has chocolate hidden in there. Maybe they're jumping up onto the kitchen counter and they're going to take a bit of that chocolate, yummy chocolate treat that you've made for somebody for the holidays. And so definitely just as much of a concern as it is in dogs.
And number one for cats, the greatest danger, lilies.
You bet. I don't think we can ever talk about lilies and cats enough. And the big concern with lilies are the Lilium species. So it's a particular type of lily. These are going to be your Asiatic lilies, Oriental, rose lily. Also, the day lilies are in there, which is a Haemorrhocallis species, but they both types of lilies cause kidney failure to occur. When you look at your holiday bouquets, those beautiful flower arrangements that are sitting at the table or decorating your house, oftentimes they will contain one of these lilies in there because they're a vibrant white lily. Any part of that lily is going to be toxic to cats and can cause kidney failure to occur.
All right, so how do people reach out to you, and when should they reach out to the Pet Poison Helpline?
You bet. So you can find us at 1-855-764-7661. You can also go to our website at petpoisonhelpline.com. And I would definitely suggest reaching out as soon as you find out that your pet has gotten into something. Taking a wait-and-see approach can be more costly, can be more stressful, and could be deadly to your pet. And so there are so many things that we can do right away, first off, to try and make sure that we kind of combat any potential issues from occurring.
All right, that's the Pet Poison Helpline. Give us the website and the phone number one more time.
You bet. PetPoisonHelpline.com, and our phone number is 855-764-7661.
Dr. Renee Schmid, always good to talk to you. Thank you. The American Pet Products Association has released its 2025 Fish and Reptile Report. I know you've been waiting for this. And here it is. The 2025 Fish and Reptile Report details that fish and reptile ownership in the U.S. has never been more popular. So we have more dogs and cats than ever before. Well, it turns out, same for fish and reptiles. An estimated 10 million U.S. households have freshwater fish, followed by 6 million owning reptiles and 2 million that keep saltwater fish. Interesting how the human-animal bond, because without the bond, people wouldn't do that. So we've been talking about the human-animal bond over the past couple of weeks. So it extends beyond dogs and cats. Fish owners are adding more fish to their tanks, with saltwater enthusiasts moving to larger, more expensive, but apparently that's okay, higher capacity setups. Bigger tanks are making waves among saltwater fish owners. 44% now have 56 to 125-gallon tanks, where, let's see the number here, 34% have gone larger with 126 and over gallon tanks. That's a lot of water. And when it comes to reptile owners, turtles and tortoises are holding the top spot. Other lizards are declining in popularity. Snakes are slithering along, and they're making a comeback, actually. So as in traditional pets, Gen Z emerges as the most powerful of influencers. Gen Z's making its mark in reptile ownership, now representing about a third of all reptile owners. More millennials are becoming fish owners, making up nearly half of saltwater fish owners and 38% of freshwater fish owners. So how do people shop for fish? Well, about half of fish owners say they buy gifts for their finned friends, by the way. What do you buy your friend that has a fish? What do you buy for your own fish beside fish food? And about 60% of reptile owners say they get gifts for their scaly friends. And they spend an average, by the way, of $34.20 per gift. So aside from crickets, maybe cricket sales are up as a result. What do you get for a pet reptile that isn't a food or a snack? And if you're planning for the future, think of your pets. People do that more than ever before. And more than ever before, included in their plans for the future when they're gone, they are planning. People, you are planning for your fish and reptiles too. All very interesting from the 2025 Fish and Reptile Report. Joey Luthman is here. If you don't know his name, you know his work. He's been on television show after television show. He's been in the movies as well. And now he's out there fighting for cats. Joey's, I'm gonna say this a little differently than you have it, Joey. Joey's joyride for cats. One man on one wheel for every cat, crisscrossing America. So, Joey, what are you doing? Explain.
Well, I am one wheeling, and if you don't know what a one wheel is, it's basically a skateboard with one giant wheel, and you kind of balance on it. It's electric, and you know you got to recharge it. But we got a couple of them. So what we're doing, me and a couple of my friends, we're going across the country to raise money for chronic kidney disease and cancer in cats. We're trying to raise money for research to go towards those areas through Every Cat Health Foundation. And to do this, to raise awareness, to raise, you know, money, and to get a lot of attention on this, I'm going from the Santa Monica Pier in California to the Marshall Point Lighthouse in Maine, just like Forrest Gump.
What? How? What span of where are you now, first of all, as I speak to you?
Right now, we are in Boise City, Oklahoma. We just got into Oklahoma last night, and it's a beautiful, beautiful state. I'm excited to keep going through the panhandle and working our way through the country.
Well, luckily, it's not tornado season, I don't think.
Oh, but no, we're just out of it, thankfully.
So let me ask you about that. So you're one-wheeling, and there you are on country roads. How do you not get hit by cars? Are you actually going on these roads? I mean, in Chicago, we see one wheel. In New York City, you see them all the time. I suppose in L.A., you see them all the time, too. But not necessarily in Oklahoma. People must point at you and say, what is that, a unicorn? They don't know.
Well, just the other day, just before coming into Oklahoma, we had some folks over in Clayton, New Mexico, that were asking just that. They came up to me, and they'd never seen anything like this coming through their town, and they were very curious. It was very fun to talk about it with them. Yeah, the roads are actually not too bad. You know, they're very straight line. You can see for miles, so I can always be safe, get off to the side of the road. There's times where I just pull over. You know, I always take the safe route, and I let cars go by, and then I go on my way. So it's never been a problem.
I want to ask more about the adventure that you're on, but first I want to know, all right, you're doing this to raise money, which is wonderful, for cat health studies with the Every Cat Health Foundation. What motivated you to start in the first place?
Well, it all spawned from losing my cat tragically to chronic kidney disease 2 years ago. His name was Winter, and he was 15. You know, everyone always said that he was an old cat, but to me, he was older. You know, he wasn't his time yet. I felt like his time was robbed, and it just felt like it was cut short. So after he passed, shortly after, my friend lost his cat, Momo, to cancer the following year. And those two events left such an impact on me and my friend. I wanted to do something to help people who might have cats who are going through this, or they might eventually go through this, just to put research towards these areas so that cats can live a longer, healthier life that they deserve. You know, they really can live a lot longer than I think some of these diseases give them. And I'm just trying to help people that might be going through this.
You know, I'll tell you, I don't know that you know. I'm on the board of directors of the Every Cat Health Foundation, the nonprofit which you are raising money for. and have been on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've been on the board for well over 20 years. They can't get rid of me, I guess. I don't know. But I do know at one point in time we had money from several pet food companies that actually came together. Pet food companies don't do that. Big ones that came together for the first time and said, we want to do this and do this and do this maybe to cat food diets, and we can help cats with kidney disease. And while we didn't really get enough funds to really make a difference, because that's the reality, you know, it's all about raising money, which you are doing. But we all believed that if we could do this, cats, and it would be, you're correct, cats would live longer, because so many cats over a certain age are likely to succumb to either kidney disease or one of the kinds of cancers, in fact, that will do you in if it's not kidney disease. And if those, if we could get those to go away, by the way, if we can get one of those cancers to go away, we could help people potentially too, Joey.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what you're doing can benefit all of us, as well as clearly benefit cats. So how did you get turned on to the Every Cat Health Foundation?
It was a no-brainer. My passion was to put money directly towards kidney disease and cancer. And so when I looked up everywhere, all across Google, all across everything, the top recommendation, if you want your money to go directly towards research for those two specific fields, as well as many others directly helping cats, it was Every Cat Health Foundation every time, on every list, was the top option. So I knew immediately I had to reach out and get in contact to raise money for them.
Can I ask how much money you've raised as of this date so far?
Well, as of this date, this is, I know this will be coming out later, but right now, October 14th, we've raised nearly $2,500, but we are on our way to raising a lot more. So I'm very excited about the future and the trajectory that, you know, our goal, though lofty, is $1 million.
What?
I truly believe it's $1 million, but I truly believe that that is not an unreachable goal. You know, we have a lot of, eyes on this. It's a very unique journey, and a lot of people are very interested in it. And so I think we can really get a lot more money in the coming weeks.
Well, as you go through Oklahoma, my advice would be to stop at one of those oil wells. And maybe, yeah, you can do what the Clampets did, and you can strike oil, and you can raise money that way.
There you go. There you go.
I want to hear more about the trip and what your day-to-day life is like. And also we'll tell people how, yes, you can contribute to help cats as well and support Joey Luthman as he travels, crisscrosses across America. Joey's Joyride for Cats, One Man, One Wheel for Every Cat, when we come back on WGN. Joey Luthman is an actor, an award-winning actor, winning the Young Artist Awards, including for his work on Private Practice as a guest star, and Save the Skeet, which is a short film I'm not familiar with necessarily. And I'll tell you, your credits, I can't read them all, Joey, because you began acting at what, the age of 5 or something?
That's right. I was acting at the age of 5. I did a theater with my whole family back in Dayton, Ohio, where I grew up.
And your first role was in a show called Nutcrackers. I'm afraid to ask what that was about.
Well, it was a comedy. I was very young. I think I just played one of the kids that was running around. But that was my first role. My whole family was in that. It was sort of a take on Christmas and with nuns and stuff. But I've been in lots of things after that. I was in Beauty and the Beast as Chip, the little teapot, the teacup, as well as Sleeping Beauty. I did Annie Get Your Gun. That was really fun. Lots of theatrical productions before coming out to Los Angeles. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a? Are you recording everything you're doing now? Is it being filmed?
It is, yeah. We, me and my two friends who are joining with me in the follow vehicle to help keep me safe and give me food and water and all that stuff, we're all actors. You know, it's me and my friends Dylan and Allison Snyder. We grew up as child actors, so we're no strangers to being, you know, in front of the camera, but also now behind the camera. We do a lot of filming. We've made a couple feature films, as well as many short films. So we're documenting the whole trip, and we're posting about it every day to Instagram and TikTok, and we're putting together longer form videos to put up on YouTube, and it's been really fun documenting all of it.
All right, so when this becomes a Netflix movie and you stop to do a radio interview, am I in the movie?
Oh, absolutely, without question.
I would hope so. All right, so there you are. You're getting up in the morning, whatever city you're in, as you crisscross the country here on your one-wheel effort to raise money for the Every Cat Health Foundation, specifically for kidney disease in cats and cancers in cats. And you get up in the morning and you hit the road on your one wheel and you're going along and you're out in the middle of nowhere. What if you have to go potty? Is there a litter box?
What? That would be appropriate given the subject, but no, there is no litter box. I just make it a point to go in the morning and then go in the evening. If I have to go in the middle of the day for lunch, then I can. You know, the diet usually consists of things that will not make me have to go so often.
And when you are traveling through all these towns, and you say to people, I'm doing this for cats, what is the reaction people have?
Well, people always love when I mention cats. They always, the first thing I say is, I just came from Los Angeles, and I'm going all the way to Maine. They're going, what? On that? That's ridiculous. That's crazy. But then when I say it's for cats, then they love it, and they're always receptive to that. They immediately want to help donate and want to find out where they can follow along. It's just a fun thing to share with everybody, because everybody loves cats. Even dog people love cats. You know, they're just one of the greatest pets, I think, that anyone can have. And everyone's always been really, really supportive of that. I'm doing it for cats.
About how many miles do you do a day?
Oh, we're averaging about 105.
Wow. And if there's rain, do you one wheel with an umbrella?
No, the board can't get too wet. So it is electronic. I don't want to mix water and electronics. It's not a good idea. So we stop and we wait for the rain to pass. And we have it accounted for in our schedule for moments like that, in case we have to stop and give it more time for weather to clear up. But luckily, we've been really fortunate. It's only drizzled a couple times and nothing too serious.
And you are aware by the time you get to Maine, it could snow?
I have been told that it could snow. I've dressed very warm. I've got extra layers I can throw on. And everyone always asks me, can you put a chain on the wheel? And the answer is no, I can't.
Are people the same, essentially, because we have got such divisiveness in America, and I don't want to talk about politics, and we only have a couple minutes left here, but are they essentially the same no matter where you are?
Extremely nice and extremely, caring and curious about what I'm doing, and everybody has been very nice along the ride. So, yeah, as far as the people that I've met, and I've gone through a lot of different cities now, everybody has been amazing.
All right, so how can we follow the amazing Joey Luthman in social media?
It's very easy. You can go to Instagram or TikTok and just look up Joey Luthman, and you'll find my page. I'll keep an update on how much money's raised, as well as every day I'll be posting a new video of all the stuff I've seen, and you can see it on both places, at Joey Luthman.
And also everycat.org to learn more about your ride. And after the ride is over, I was kidding about a Netflix special, but I kind of really wasn't. I mean, are we going to see this somewhere?
It will be posted on my YouTube channel, which is also at Joey Luthman, as well as on Instagram and everywhere else. Hey, if Netflix wants to make a deal, that I'm willing to talk, but for now, YouTube it is.
YouTube it is. Joey Luthman, L-U-T-H-M-A-N, by the way. Thank you so much for everything you are doing for cats, raising the money and raising the awareness. It's not, and I suspect you've thought about that. It's not only the dollars. And as you go through these towns, are you doing radio interviews in these smaller towns? And maybe the newspaper is writing a story about you. Is that happening?
Absolutely. We're going to be doing lots of other press opportunities, radio interviews. I'm going to try to do some press in my hometown in Dayton, Ohio, as well as throughout Ohio and throughout the East Coast. Yeah, I'm very excited about all the fun opportunities that are coming up. And the awareness is a very big point that you bring up because, you know, for me, I wasn't as informed, and I'm sure it's the same for millions of other cat owners and cat parents all around the country and the world. So this is a great way, a fun way for, you know, a crazy man like me to go across the country on one wheel to help bring awareness to these very serious and all too common illnesses.
Well, you're terrific for doing this. I hope someday to meet you in person. Thank you so much, Joey Luthman. Again, everycat.org to learn more, or any number of the Joey Luthman platforms. Thank you, Joey. So when we think of protecting ourselves from Lyme disease, we think mostly of the spring and summer. And when we think of protecting our dog, therefore, we think mostly of the spring and summer. And in fact, we should. We do need to protect our dogs from tick diseases. And the most common one happens to be Lyme disease. But there are so many others, by the way. In fact, now is the time when dogs happen to be most susceptible to Lyme disease. It has to do, I'm not going to explain it now, with the life cycle of the tick. But no matter, we can do more to protect our dogs from tick disease than we can ourselves, but not if we don't take action. And some people think, well, it's getting cooler out. We don't have to worry about it anymore. No, October and November throughout the Midwest is the time when dogs most often require that protection. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.